Hello, everyone. Welcome to Outpost Chicago. How's everyone enjoying their experience so far? Good? Yeah? Very nice. Welcome to the Making Our Mark panel here at Chicago. This is going to be a panel about fan games and mods. We've got a couple of different projects that are represented up here. First off, my name is Duststorm. I am a host and the owner of a podcast called Podtacular. We're a weekly Halo podcast, and we dabble in just about anything and everything under the Halo sun.
Hello, I am Matt Dratt, and I am from C3 Live, which kind of highlights and showcases a bunch of different Halo Custom Edition mods. And I also make a mod called Takedown.
Hi, I'm Slow Bullet, and I am also on C3. I helped find it along with Matt Dratt here back in 2010.
Yeah, and I'm Masters 1337. I am the lead developer on SBV3.
All right, so we're going to start with the basics. What is a mod? What is a mod? You guys are pretty much experts at this arena. So it's custom content created within the confines of game engines and game mechanics that are already pre-built out there. Most of the content comes inspired from the game or inspiration from other games that get ingested into a particular game. But before we dive into it too much, how did you guys get involved with modding in the first place? I'm sure that's a question that a lot of people have, so let's start with that. How did you guys get that start?
Oh, geez. I've always been fascinated with like creating your own things. So like even games before I started really getting into Halo, like Roller Coaster Tycoon, where you can like build your own things and everything. So once I really started getting into Halo, once I found out about custom edition allows you to create whatever you want for the Halo base, that was something I had to jump into. And it took me quite a while before I could actually learn how to actually make my own mod and projects. But if you keep at it, it's actually not too terribly hard.
Very nice.
I got into it back like, I want to say 2007, because Halo 3 came out and they introduced Forge. And I like got into PC. I'm like, is there anything like this? And someone's like, oh, Halo Custom Edition, it's way better than Forge. You can do whatever you want. And I saw like these Zelda maps, this Rainbow Road Mario Kart map. There's a Metroid one. I'm like, I want to do this. So I'm like, all right, I got to get behind it. I'm not really good at modding, so I like just showcasing it so other people can see how cool it is. So I get with these kind of guys, and they do all the mod work. I just show it off.
So you have the easy part.
Oh, yeah.
You have the easy job.
I get the way easy job.
That's pretty much me with the podcast. I talk about what everyone else does.
Yeah. Exactly. It's so good.
So I got involved shortly after Halo on the PC came out, but only kind of like dabbled in a little bit of stuff. But one night I wasn't listening to my dad and was playing video games at 6 a.m. And I saw somebody from a web forum who made mods, and I started talking to him, and then he kind of brought me into the culture of Halo Custom Edition and helping me understand the game.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I haven't really dabbled in modding to a great extent. I've lightly dabbled. I'm more of a coder than a modder, just like at a very basic, simple form. Like coding the game show for here, and I have a little Discord, Twitter bot type of thing. So there's all that fun stuff. But at its core, mods are using custom content within developer-provided tools. So any kind of 3D modeling program, tagging program, BSP program that is generally used to make a particular game. Mods consist of those same set of tools, either the official ones that the developers use to make games or unofficial ones with certain plugins to do conversions and that kind of stuff. But mods just aren't strictly tied to what is provided in the game. You can also add to the game as well through importing your own stuff or creating your own content, whether it's weapons, character models, maps, terrain, all that kind of stuff. And CE Custom Edition was a spinoff of Halo Combat Evolved. We'll get into that in a little more detail, but just from the representation up here on the panel, I think this is probably the best representation we're going to get of true modding in Halo. And you guys have implemented some crazy stuff already.
It's crazy to see how much people can break Halo 1 and create like way new, crazier things that I don't think Bungie would ever have imagined would have happened with that game engine.
What's the craziest thing you guys have seen added to Halo that you thought might not have fit, but strangely enough, works.
A lot of stuff SPV3 does.
Yeah. CMT. Really is.
I would have to say the Zelda project that was done in the mid-2000s.
Oh, yeah, that was...
Yeah, that was, like, crazy, because Zelda's locking on... I mean, wow, Zelda's locking on stuff. Link's locking onto stuff and, like, jumping in the air with a sword. And, like, and except I'm like, I had no idea, like, anybody could do something like that. I mean, what we do in SPV3 is really cool, but we're still being an FPS. To see Halo transformed into, you know, a Zelda game was just...
Did they get the little hi-ya sound in there?
Yeah, you did that too.
Yeah, they did.
They even had like the horses too. So like whenever you actually see like horse biped move, you're just like, all right, so we got warthogs and now we got horses. All right. Man.
Yeah. Have you ever
interesting.
Have you ever seen the warthog and the Mustang?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a really good creator out there called Kirby, and he's created like crazy stuff, like a top-down version of the game. It's like, how do you think of this stuff? How do you can even implement that? Is
yeah, he made basically a Spartan strike and assault in Halo 1 CE.
Yeah,
it was impressive.
Yeah,
like this old, dated 2001 engine is like playing all this stuff, and it's like, how do you guys keep coming up with this stuff? But it's impressive. I love it. Keep doing it.
There's also the RPG maps that are kind of like that Gears Tactics game coming out, or XCOM. Where you can tell your units where to move and who to fight and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And shout out to Operation Trebuchet as well.
Doing
that
like
same
that.
Kind of squad stuff, yeah. Mods aren't only meant for importing new stuff, though. It also is a platform to build your own story and experience within the confines of the game, or by doing some crazy stuff like SPV3 does and adding complete new modes and other features like that. But in addition to being able to tell your own story within the universe, it allows you to just be creative, and it also gives a renewed presence of the franchise a little bit too. Even though some of the stuff that these folks are working on aren't necessarily canon or part of official lore, it does give another kind of breath of life to the lifespan of Halo, and just modding in general just kind of extends the lifespan of certain games. Fallout has benefited greatly from it. Fortnite has started dabbling in it as well. So there's lots of communities out there that really take advantage of modding potential when it's presented to them. So what are fan games? These are games that are based off of kind of the core concept of the franchise that they're modeled off of, but they're done by fans, for fans, to kind of give a fan interpretation of what a developer has done. So a lot of the big projects are Installation 01, Project Contingency, and there's a few other smaller ones popping up like Downfall and Coral as well. But those are kind of branching off of the mainline story and multiplayer concepts of the Halo franchise and kind of taking their own spin on it. So Installation 01's aimed, just because they're not here, and unfortunately their panel and Philly got canceled, but their project really is catering towards that Bungie-style Halo and kind of taking their own spin on it and putting it on PC. And then there's other games that are trying to bring Halo to Linux, Mac, and just provide another kind of concept of what Halo could be and what they envision Halo has potential for. And there's one phrase that allows us to do it all.
Hey.
The content usage rules. Game content usage rules.
That's so true.
Thankfully, Halo's been in a state where we have been able to do the things that we want to do within the confines of the franchise without getting into too much legal mess. Pretty much the stipulation is, you can make whatever you want as long as you don't make any money off of it. That's pretty much what it boils down to. There's some more fine granular stuff, but if you're passionate about Halo and you want to make something within the Halo brand, then Microsoft and 343 are very open to that kind of concept and honestly encourage it too.
Oh yeah. They're not like Nintendo.
No, they're not. This single phrase has been very beneficial, not just to the PC and modding community, but to cosplay. So we're at the armory stage, so 4 or 5th being able to do all the stuff that they've been able to do. artists, renderers, composers, everyone in the community. If you've created any kind of content that's Halo related, has benefited from this specific game content usage role that Microsoft has.
You gotta get it as a tattoo.
Branded on me forever.
Yes. T-shirt.
All right, so let's start off with the origins of Halo modding tools. I'm just gonna talk to the points briefly, and then I'm gonna let you guys take over pretty much as we go through the slides. But it started with Halo Combat Evolved, and there were some unofficial tools that were built by the community before Halo Custom Edition came out. You guys have some experience there, so how was it like before Custom Edition?
Well, I actually started with those tools, technically. So basically, those tools let you manipulate certain things in the game, but you were very limited as you couldn't add anything. You just had to manipulate variables that were already exposed to you through these tools and what people understood of them. And eventually it got more complex with people rebuilding maps, making single-player maps into multiplayer maps. But eventually, it helped push Gearbox to release Halo Custom Edition. Because while Bungie made Halo Halo 1 Xbox, in terms of terminology, we talk about the original Xbox game as Halo 1, whereas Halo Custom Edition we talk about as Halo CE. So I know most of the community thinks of Halo CE as Halo 1, but not us.
No. Yeah.
But you know that push in the community with Halo PC to be able to do user content was a big part in getting Custom Edition out the door with the actual tools that Bungie used to make the original Halo 1 with some slight modifications.
Yeah. And like you said, that kind of led into the advent of official modding tools being supported. So Gearbox coming out with their tool set, basically the entire tool set that was used to make Halo was provided, I think with maybe the exception of one tool or something like that.
It's pretty much what was they used. Some stuff is missing, and some stuff just broke in the port to PC.
Yeah.
Which Gearbox didn't need anyway, because the content that you needed those tools for was already there in the game files. But it's, I would say it's a good like 98-95% of what they used to make the original game.
Yeah. And with that too, we have Forge Mode officially within the Xbox lineup of games and Halo 5 Forge now as well. And with MCC coming to PC, that might open up an avenue for a whole new arena of modding content for Halo. But as far as official goes, we've got Halo Custom Edition, technically Halo 2 Vista, does have a spot, and then Forge Mode within the confines of the actual game itself, which that in and of itself is actually a pretty big deal. I know Halo wasn't necessarily the first one to have a map manipulator of any kind within the video game, but I know Bungie with Forge and Halo 3 definitely revolutionized a lot of the ways that just your average player manipulates and creates their own experiences.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because especially in the Halo CE community, you know, Forge is so much more basic than the tools we have. So sometimes people are kind of like, eh, on it. But I mean, the accessibility of Forge and the stuff it lets ordinary people do is like really huge in terms of just getting people to understand level design, multiplayer mechanics, and just collaboration as a whole. So, you know, it's nice to have both.
Yeah. What have you guys benefited most from as far as like the modding content stuff?
Like, what was that?
What have you guys benefited most as far as like the modding tool set that you have available to you?
I don't know. I wouldn't say like, I think that the modding stuff that we've got was cool, but the stuff that the community's actually made, because like whenever we had it, our modding kit was so limited, but then someone came out with this thing called Open Source, and they also added more stuff to make our engine even better. It was impressive. Like, I feel like the modding has gone much, it gets better and better a long time, and that's why with this new expansion for Halo coming to PC, I really hope to see that they can actually let us do mods in that too, instead of Forge. Forge is nice, but custom is way better.
Yeah. What about you, Masters? Just from the, because you've used the tool set a lot just to make SPV3.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do it without Open Source, which was done by Cornman, which you guys all know is Scoops. He works on the MCC now at 343.
The Scoop TM. You can find him in the MCC updates.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's crazy because, you know, even like on a weekly basis, people are doing things that surprise me. Like people are always still discovering stuff. The community's, sorry. my throat is like completely shot. Oh, that sounds so much better. But people just come up with things on near a weekly basis and stuff. Even being able to have 60 frames per second animations in CE was thought to be impossible up until 2 years ago. And since then, you know, memory manipulation and new ways of understanding tools and certain things that they even do, you know, keep popping up. You know, we have the original tools, but we received almost no documentation on them. So there's things in, man, I'm in the quoting the arbiter here. Okay, there are things with the Halo editing kit that even we don't understand yet, that people are still discovering.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think the most impressive one was whenever we did our last CE3 live that we had, forever, we always thought that AI couldn't sync in anything. And then we get this one thing where AI actually started syncing a little bit. And we're like, what is this? We can see that? You can see that? That's impressive, because in the old ones, if you saw something, you're like, hey, that's over there. And they're like, I don't see anything. But now whenever it's over there, it's like, oh, cool. We can work together. We can do co-op maps now. So it's still going. It's impressive at how this engine from 2001 is still alive and it's still continuing to get bigger and better.
Yeah. So now we're going to dive into these guys' projects and what they've been working on. So we'll go ahead and kick it over to CE3. Got a nice little fun.
Ooh, nice transition.
Fun animation.
Yeah, so we do CE3. So there's essentially two prongs to that. We did a CE3 live stream, which was essentially an E3 for Halo Custom Edition. So once every year to sometime usually later in the summer, we would just highlight like all the projects that are coming up. And this was great because it also gave a lot of motivation for the community as well, because people would see all the crazy stuff that is happening and they want to keep creating more crazier things. And then we currently also do another thing called HMU, where we show off all the release projects.
Yeah, with HMU, we just basically, it's Halo Maps Update, where every time someone makes a map, they upload it to our server. We used to have another website. It was called halomaps.org. Sadly, doesn't get uploaded as often. So now we have ours, because we want to keep that community going, and we just show off all the maps. And I mean all of them, even the mods that just have like, you know, oh, I replaced the wall texture. That's still cool. You're doing something. I'm still impressed. But this might be a little cooler.
Great start. Keep going. Yeah, type of thing. Yeah.
It's a great start. Like, I'm not telling anyone to stop going there, but just keep going. Because like you were saying earlier with the fan games, whenever Installation 01 came on our show first, I told them they were horrible. They weren't going to go anywhere. They gave us this bland texture thing. I'm like, so don't listen to people. Don't listen to me. Do what you want to do. Get out there, because they are now super famous. They're like in the Halo community, and they are way better than they were. So
I would also add that SPV3 actually really started off as a texture swap mod, and eventually just people who knew a little bit about different things all came together, focusing on their own departments until we eventually got to where we are today. Kind of took 15 years, but
yeah. So we've got this little trailer video.
Oh yeah, I went ahead and took a lot of snippets from CE3 Lives over the years. And kind of just compile them down to a short little quick video here. So if you're unfamiliar with the community, you can see some of the crazy things that people have been making.
All right.
So yeah, that was all Halo 1. And as you can see from that, there's just so much you can do with it, so many different styles. You can see some people made maps that weren't even like Halo. Some people made maps that were like Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo Reach. Like,
oh, yeah.
You can go crazy with it. And we have just some screenshots of just various projects, so we can just talk about whatever about Custom Edition. You two have any input?
Just mainly, like, once again, you can just see like all this cool content, just, and it's still available. You can still download and all that. So if you have, I believe you don't even, do you need Halo Combat Evolved anymore?
Yeah, you still need it.
Just, but it's like just maybe like 10 bucks on Amazon. So
I don't even want to talk about this one.
Yeah.
I mean, the possibilities are endless.
They are.
This is an old screenshot of SPV3.
Oh. Yeah, that is.
It's Halo composition there.
Yeah.
So briefly, I just want to talk a little bit about how to actually make a mod. Where do you start? How do you go through that process? This is going to be a bit geared towards what I do because I like to make single player maps. So I'm going to kind of go over that. So you kind of just got to start with your idea. What are you making? Single player, multiplayer, weapons, characters, vehicles. I think what's so great about this community is that everything's, especially now, everyone just shares everything. So I might not be the biggest into creating weapons and characters and vehicles, but other people are, and I can use those in my projects.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more, communication's a lot more open these days than in the early days, which is nice. You know, a lot of tools have been made to help people learn from other people's content too.
Drink break.
Yeah. So first, especially when you start to create a map, you got to start with a modeling tool. So you got to start in 3ds Max and actually create a map. This is how the developers would actually go about doing it. Like I said, custom edition, we essentially just have the developers tools so we can just make a map how we would. And from there, you got to go into actually placing the textures, kind of get it all together. Once you're kind of in this stage where it looks good in 3ds Max, you got to import it into the actual game engine. And then this is a screenshot from our kind of tool we use called Sapien. It allows us to essentially place objects and everything. It's essentially a screenshot version of the game engine. We can't actually play in this, but it's kind of an overhead view. This is essentially our Forge.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So from here, like I said, you just go through and you just start placing everything around. You want to go to the next one. We have another tool called Gorilla. This is kind of how you would go through and edit all the properties on everything. This is probably a pretty hard screenshot to see from the audience because I took a screenshot of 4K monitor, so everything's really tiny.
I'll admit this is my least favorite tool. I don't like it.
But, I mean, I just have an AI pulled up in here, and you can go through and set all these settings. How much does it shoot? How much does it throw grenades? What weapon does it have? What color is the armor? All these various different properties to create whatever you really want to create.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the most crucial tool, yet the most difficult to work with out of the tool set.
It really is. You have to have this one pretty much to make it work and all that. But the only reason why I say I don't like it is just because there's so much and I just get flustered. But just stay at it and you can like figure out everything you can do. I believe in there also like you can figure out how far things can move and all that.
Yeah. When creating mods, especially for like the later Halos, like even the Xbox ones, this is kind of where a lot of people start. They kind of create a tool like this. So you can swap out textures. You can swap out whatever you want. And that's kind of where it starts. And then Sapien really allows us to go in and make our own maps. From here, since I like creating single player levels, I'm just going through and actually placing AI. If you can see there's a bunch of boxes. Those are firing positions. So essentially that tells the AI where to go. You can set different positions. So, hey, here's where you go to attack. Here's where you go to hide if you need to defend. All those various different things. And then the next one, you'll notice these giant boxes. These are called trigger volumes. So a lot of the later Halos still use these, as far as I know. Essentially, you walk into this box, and it tells the game to do something. So as a player, I think the biggest one you can notice is cinematics, where you walk into a certain area, and then a cinematic starts. You're walking into a trigger volume.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, with the firing position things in your screenshot, you see how it's just boxes on the ground? You can actually have over 20 of those, each one with an alphabetical value. However, we didn't know you could actually show what letter represents each one until my cat jumped on my keyboard one day and hit a keyboard combo and hit two keys, and the whole community was trying to figure out what it hit. And then like 3 years later, somebody finally figured it out. And now it's like pretty essential to everything that I do in it, because the more complex encounters, you really need to know all the positions where the AI are going to run under certain conditions.
Yeah, if you can see really close to there's boxes and boxes and boxes.
So you can say AI scripting is cat logic? Is that,
yeah,
like, is that fair to say?
Yeah, the cat jumped on the keyboard and we eventually figured it out. That's how poor the documentation was.
Yeah.
You don't even know what the keyboard shortcuts are.
No.
It wasn't even a list of those to us.
They just gave us things and they're like, here you go. Where's the instructions? You don't need them.
Actually,
you got it.
I think the instructions they gave us in the tutorial at some points were wrong.
Jeez. Needed like a decompiler just to figure out what
we didn't have
what triggers
to compile stuff either.
No. I mean, that's
even compiling a script we didn't know how to do.
I mean, that's a good way to learn, though, is looking at other projects and looking at other maps just to see what the heck they're doing.
Yeah, that's true.
From there, especially for single player, you actually got to script it all together. So you got to tell the game engine, okay, person walked into this box. What do I do now? Do I place AI? Do I wait until the AI are all dead to make a checkpoint? You got to put all these things together to actually get it to work. And then from there, you can compile it. And then you get a nice little kind of finished view, obviously, from here. I added a few more things that I kind of skipped over. But essentially, you then get an end product like this. And then this is also a preview from the project I'm working on. It's called Takedown Extermination. Like I said, this is all running on Halo 1.
Area secure. All hostiles have been eliminated.
Affirmative. Did somebody order a warthog?
See where I drew inspiration from. But essentially walking through that, by the time you hit that last trigger volume there, it waits for all the AI to be dead and then it spawns the lions and the pelican.
Okay, let's move out. Let's find the security checkpoint.
Hey. These are just a few more screenshots from Takedown. Hopefully this will be released later this year, I'm hoping for. But yeah, it's essentially just a little mini campaign. There's 8 different mini levels to run through. So if you're interested, definitely, if you don't have Halo 1 already, get Halo 1 and then you can download this for free later this year. So I wanted to show that off. Spiral, who is working on that project, couldn't be here today, but he will be at the Anaheim Halo Outpost Discovery, and he has a panel Saturday, August 31st, Halo Custom Edition Modding a Legend. So if you're there, definitely go check that out. But as you were mentioning, like, fan game earlier, mm-hmm. like, that looks like an expansion pack to Halo 2, but it's really all does. Just running on Halo 1.
Yeah, and it's impressive because it's only, like, one guy, just Spiral working on it, isn't it? Yeah. So it's been in works for a while, but it's amazing just to see this one guy put all this into the Halo 1 engine, because whenever I first saw him, like, oh, Halo 2. We don't put Halo 2 Vista on our show. He's like, no, this is Halo 1. I'm like, all right. I don't believe it. Gives me a demo. I'm like, okay.
Cool. Like, that's voodoo magic of some kind.
It is. It's impressive. Because, like, as you saw, he has, like, one of my favorite things was there was, like, a Reach thing in it. For the longest time, we were, like, always asking for Reach to PC, but we never got it. So we brought it to us first.
Now we got SPV3.
There you go.
Did we have the trailer or...
I can try to pull it up on YouTube.
Yeah. That was a lot easier to pull up than I thought it would be. So, that's the next slide on that one. So, that's SPV. So, that's SPV3. And I can't actually read my own slides from over here.
That's the best I can get you.
Yeah. So basically, as you can see, what we've done is we've taken the original campaign and expanded on it in so many ways. It's got new missions, 24 hours of gameplay. It's got a total of 17 missions, actually. 3 of them are updated versions of a project called Lemuria, which Matt right here worked on as a cinematic director. And that came out in, 2011?
Yeah.
Right? Sounds about right.
Late 2011, I think.
Well,
the full final thing didn't come out till late 2012, because I was in C3 2012, I remember that.
So our goal was basically to build on Halo 1 and kind of build a a parallel sequel to the franchise, drawing off everything that we liked and saw in other Halo games, stuff that was cut, stuff in books, movies, whatever media it may be, and try to bring that all under the umbrella of what we thought made Halo 1 such a fun and impressive game.
Yeah.
So, how did we make it? I should have sat next to Matt.
Want to switch?
There you go.
We used the original development tools provided by Gearbox, as we talked about earlier. We also eventually learned how to recompile the original campaign. An individual named Steelix started looking into how to extract the content from the Halo PC version of Halo, which is different than Halo Custom Edition, and get it into a readable format by the tools. As I said earlier, it actually all started as just a texture mod. It was kind of like, oh, well, there's no Halo 1 on Custom Edition. Let me pour it over somebody's texture pack and fix some stuff, and I'll throw it up for people to download. That way people can play it all on one game install. And eventually someone was like, hey, I have this really cool battle rifle model. Let's add that in. It's like, all right. And someone's like, yeah, and I reanimated some weapons. Let's throw that in. I'm like, all right. And in about 8 months, we had something that we shipped and released. It's funny, depending on who you are. But we released it, and Bungie.net took notice. So Bungie put it up on their front page, and the next day we had like tens of thousands of downloads, and our server host got hit by a $2,000 bill. So if he's out there, you know, he can hit me up now and finally get repaid. But we were like freaking out. We're like, what do we do? We weren't expecting it to be this big. We were just kind of focusing on, you know, this fun, zany thing of like, what could we do just throwing stuff into the original game? And then after that, we're like, all right, well, this is really popular. We did some multiplayer stuff for a while. We decided, we can update it and add more stuff in. And that was kind of a problem, because we just decided to throw more stuff in without much direction. And then when we figured out that we could actually extend the levels, we ended up with missions like Halo that would literally take about 3 hours to complete. So eventually we all got fed up working on it, and we kind of all left CE, or most of us did. And then we all sort of rejoined in 2011 and started working with the game again. And that's what was the start of SBV3. So why did we make it? For me, I simply love Halo Combat Evolved. I never really connected with Halo 2 when it came out, which is what drove my interest on Halo on the PC. Just because on the PC, if you wanted more Halo 1, that's exactly what Custom Edition was for. And the sky was the limit as far as for what we could create. But the reason why I really like Halo Combat Evolved so much is there's such a diverse amount of environments and situations for the player to be in. Even if you look at later titles, there's no Halo game that really does everything that Halo 1 does. Like, not every game has a Covenant ship level. Not every game has these situations with the Flood. Not every game has a swamp. Not every game has a human ship. So Halo 1 kind of covers all the pieces, which makes it great for us just experimenting with what different things we can do with the sandbox and the enemies and just the way the game plays. So we always tried to improve where we could and respect what was done and intended. So there's some areas of the original game where it has its rough edges, library probably being one of the, you know, most recognized. So going there, we did some stuff like changing the colors of the floors to give players a better sense of progression and mixing up the right amount of Flood ranks. It went from basically 4 to about 12 in terms of different types of Flood you'll encounter. We just wanted to expand on what we thought made Halo 1 so much fun and add more layers and complexity of combat. Because if you look at a game series like Gears of War, where Gears of War 1 is like almost just like a proof of concept of, you know, what this cover shooter could be, then you get to Gears 2 and they blow the worlds open and they add more types of enemies and weapons and different things you to react to that always throws a curveball at you. That was sort of our approach with this. And after, you know, building our unique sandbox and our infrastructure for this project, we were like, well, what else can we do with it? And that's where we really started getting into this idea of, you know, what missions could we include in the game? What would players want to see? And in the case of the Lemuria project, you know, how could we kind of make our own Halo 3 ODST of our own project? And we did that in partnership with the Lemuria team, just revising and giving their hard work a second lease on life as it, you said 2012, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was 2011. But, you know, giving this project, which released in 2012, and exposing it to so many more people. And for a lot of people, it's been their favorite part of the entire update.
Cool. So, yeah, that's SPV3. I think we have maybe 5 minutes for questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes for questions. So we have
a mic set up, too, if you want
to. If you have a question, there's a mic over here where you can...
That one. All right. So I've seen, like, from all of the content you've shown so far today, I love it. But I have to ask, what's the silliest fan mods you have all witnessed?
I think it's the pirates.
Yeah, the pirates.
I hadn't seen that before. That one was pretty funny.
I remember when you guys streamed that, I just burst out laughing when I saw it.
Yeah, we love having the goofy projects in each C3 just to have a good kind of midpoint laugh.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's been some random ones. I would say the pirate one is definitely the weirdest one, for sure. But there are a lot more weird ones I just can't think of right now. But there's some that are just goofy. There's, like, one that has, like, anime girls in it. It's like, of course there is. Of course, there's someone out there that's going to download it. I know.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
I'll leave for that.
Just check our website. It's probably on there.
Any other questions? Yes.
Okay, so my question revolved mainly around SPV3, as I actually recently played it a few months ago. I haven't tried 3.2 yet, but I am going to get to that. Awesome mod, by the way. Great job. My question revolved around the addition of armor abilities and the custom classes, because I know those are kind of slightly controversial. I was wondering what, like, the thought process was when implementing those into the mod.
So the good thing about this is that I actually just made a video I hope to publish soon that actually goes into that in very fine detail. But, you know, I always believe that very rarely are there bad ideas. But you always have to look at how is something going to work and what you're trying to do. And that's not a knock against Reach or Four for their loadouts or their armor abilities, because they suit those games for what those games are trying to do. And I think they both do it kind of well. In the case of Reach, though, as far as armor abilities, my personal belief is that you should never have anything that interrupts the flow of combat. So if you look at the way we do our armor abilities, there's nothing in there where you're ever activating it, stopping, and waiting for it to recharge. The sprint kind of has that, but you're always on the move. And if you're sprinting for more than 5 seconds, you're doing it to get into cover and charge your shield again. So by the time that's done, you're already on the move. Same thing with the visor, more or less. You're watching it, but once it depletes, then you're kind of retreating and more in defensive mode. Whereas with the health regen, it's passive. So once your shield's charged and your health starts slowly recharging, it's not interrupting you or making you wait in a corner until it's back. A lot of times I observed in Reach, if you're using, say, the hologram, I think we've all been there. You're hiding somewhere, you shoot the hologram out, someone sees it, and you don't want to run out there again until your hologram is back. Same thing with some things like the drop shield or even armor lock. And that just, to me, slows the gameplay to a, not a crawl, but it definitely changes how you're thinking and deciding to approach encounters.
Remember, that's an opinion.
Yeah.
I love the armor abilities. Don't get me started. Hate me.
But the as far as the loadouts go, you know, that was really kind of an idea of, you know, how many different ways can you go back and play these levels after, you know, 15 years? So if we want to start you off on Silent Cartographer with a shotgun and a rocket launcher, first off, you never ever get to use a shotgun on Silent Cartographer. And if we gave it to you, players would gravitate towards that for all the interior sections and ignore a lot of the other weapons. But if you introduce only one shotgun on the level, along with a rocket launcher in the beginning, and you have no headshot weapon, that's going to fundamentally change how you try and approach these areas. And if you only know you have limited ammo in it, you're going to use it rather conservatively and not want to, you know, be shotgunning everything you see in sight. And you're going to have to be more mindful about what you're carrying as your second weapon. Same thing with the grenade launchers we attach to the weapons. When you have one of those, you're going to be looking at things differently than you would as if you found them on the ground throughout the mission. So it's really just about trying to create as many different ways for a player to return to the mission and try to approach it in a different way. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the question.
We've got time for one more, if there's one more question out there.
What are some of your guys' favorite mods, like, for games other than Halo?
Ooh, this one's good, because originally whenever we did C3, I wanted to do a bunch of other things. I was like, Dre, we should do a bunch of mods for all these other games, and then I realized that's way too big of an idea. But I'd have to say what actually got me into modding technically was Halo, but once I got into that, Morrowind is where I was at, so I did a lot of modding with that. Yes, someone out there back in there. Morrowind mods, one of the favorite ones that I did was the HD Res texture pack for that. And that's why I love SPV3 also, is because they were working on that and then they were doing that. So it's like, cool, you're making my old game look brand new, which SPV3 does completely. Yeah. But Morrowind's with that one, that's what was one of my favorite video game mods out there, was the remake of that.
I would just have to go with a lot of the Valve games, because Valve's very good about releasing the developer tools. And I think if the developer does that, it just expands the potential so much more.
Definitely.
Sure.
So this might be kind of sidestepping your question, but I've always been a huge fan of the Sins of the Prophets mod for Sins of a Solar Empire. Because what they've done with that and the attention to detail to all their ships and just the lore surrounding it and the way they continue to update it is like really impressive. You know, if you like Halo RTS and you like spaceships, you should definitely check that out. In terms of other mods, I remember the first mod I think I ever saw as I was in New York City visiting my childhood friend who I used to like shipped around in the strollers with when I was a baby. And he like showed me his computer and he's like showing me this Max Payne mod that was of the Matrix. This is before they made Enter the Matrix or stuff. And he's like showing it to me and he's like, yeah, can you believe it? Like people actually had to go and encode this in there. And I'm like, oh yeah, like that's cool. I wonder how they do that. And then I eventually got roped into doing mods and stuff too. So,
cool. Well, thanks everyone for coming out. Hopefully you enjoy the rest of your Outpost experience. We're going to take a quick picture, but these other guys I think will probably be hanging around for a little bit in the back. Mm-hmm. I have a panel coming up right after this, which is Forging World. So if you guys are going to stick around, we'll see you in a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be here all weekend too if you want to chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.